track 8, and we come to letters to the editor, of which there are three this week. The first one is from Dr. John Wilkerson of Exminster. It's headlined, Not Sufficient. Child poverty in our country is at record levels and increasing at an alarming rate. Last week, the government's own statistics revealed that a third of those between infancy and adulthood, around 4.3 million children, are living in, quote, relative poverty, up from 3.6 million in 2010-11. The proportion of children living in, quote, absolute poverty in 22-23 rose by its highest rate for 30 years. Recent official statistics also show that over 142,000 children are living in, quote, temporary accommodation, often of appalling standard and for years rather than weeks or months. Such kids are being robbed of their childhood, in many cases permanently impairing their life chances and future mental and physical health. Yet my own MP, Mel Stride, a senior government minister, believes that today's more open approach to mental health may have gone too far and that there is, quote, a real risk now that we are labelling the normal ups and downs of human life as medical conditions. He claims, without evidence, that if a person attends his GP, quote, feeling rather down and bluesy, on 94% of occasions they will be signed off as not fit to carry out any work whatsoever. This while Mr. Stride introduces new measures to force benefits claimants into work. As a retired GP, may I remind Mr. Stride that there's overwhelming evidence that present and future mental health problems can indeed result from the poverty we see all around us. I believe it likely that most GPs will respond to Mr. Stride's slur on their competence by agreeing that most people certified unfit to work due to mental health disorders would love to be in a secure job that they can manage and would provide fulfilment in their lives. And of course, Mr. Stride knows all this perfectly well, but for his own reasons chooses to ignore it. Mr. Stride calls for an honest, grown-up debate on the subject. I wonder if he would care to give his own honest explanation of how this dire increase in poverty has come to pass in one of the richest countries in the world. But please, could he spare us the usual claptrap from most government spokespeople parroting how much money has been allocated to this or that area of need? The point is this, what has been provided over the last 14 years is nowhere near sufficient.
Michael Carter writes, Tory MP and former Environment Secretary George Eustace recently wrote a letter aiming to reassure us about the carbon footprint of cattle farming in the UK. He says that reducing consumption of meat wouldn't reduce our national emissions of greenhouse gases. His explanation that we would just export more beef if we ate less is at best dubious and is certainly greenwashing. As he well knows, the UK is a net importer of beef, so we could reduce our beef consumption by importing less. The modest reduction proposed by the climate change committees is consistent with that approach, and the government should create the right conditions to make that happen. More importantly, climate change is a global issue, so focusing on the national carbon budget and ignoring what we import is wrong. The UK's consumption of beef per capita is twice the world average, and if he wants us to show leadership, the UK should be reducing consumption. He must realise it would be a disaster if countries that currently eat less beef increased to our level. He also wants us to think that farm methane emissions are a problem that's easily solved because the technology exists to capture methane from slurry stores. Wonderful, but what is his government doing to make methane capture from slurry common practice? He says that environmental policy is complex. Yes, but it is far too important to have that complexity exploited for political gain. We need policies that actually make a difference, but what are we going to get as false assurance?
Keeping Faith, a letter from Heather Richardson. I have been contemplating a response to a letter you printed from Mr. Charles Letchford on March the 7th called Can We Non-Christians Expect Life After Death? Follow me. There is no better time than Easter to contemplate the question. God knows the human condition and has made a pathway back to a wonderful, loving friendship with himself. A place to feel safe and have peace that will comfort and sustain us even now, and is open to every person should they accept his offer of eternal life. All of which can be savoured even now before death. God sent his Son into the world not to judge the world, but to save the world through him. When it's our turn to walk from this world, whatever our background or belief, we will take with us our answer to his question, what did you do with Jesus? Jesus asks us to follow him. No better person to follow.